97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemster with the Art of Potential show. Thank you for joining us today. We have a very interesting show for you. If you've been listening recently, you heard we did a show on grieving a loss. And now we're actually going to talk about how to cope with grief from the other side, as well as how to manifest your goals. It's a very interesting show. My guest today is Brett Derby. Welcome, Brett.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
And many of you know his father, Chris Derby. Chris was a pillar in the community. He owned the UPS stores over in Meadowmont and on Fordham Boulevard, and he was a huge proponent of Extraordinary Ventures. He sat on the board, just very involved in that. And the community lost Chris in February, and it was just a devastating loss for everybody. And Brett is Chris's son, so he's kind of been on the journey with a lot of people. Chris was also involved in Chapel Hill Leads, for those of you who are members of that organization. So we're going to talk about, you know, kind of how he dealt with that, and then Brett has an amazing story in and of himself, so we're also going to touch on that and where he is with things. So without further ado, let's get started. So Brett, let's go and kind of talk about how your world was rocked back in February.
Yeah, that it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely nothing really prepares you for it. And I was, you know, it's interesting. So when you're in business school and a lot of these schools, you hear a lot of stories, right? And a lot of people have been through adversity. And I always felt very fortunate, you know, pretty plain vanilla life and had been pretty fortunate, obviously, until this happened. And, you know, I think no matter what you've been through, really nothing prepares you for losing a loved one, especially, you know, a parent.
Right.
At a fairly young age.
Right. And your dad was a great dad. I mean, he was very involved. It wasn't, you didn't have a sense of, okay, this is looming around the corner. There was like no indication. It was kind of like, bam, right on you.
Yeah. Not, absolutely no indication. Right. Completely shocked when I got that call.
Yeah. So then you have to pick yourself up. You're in, you know, Columbia Business School. So, you know, it's not like you can stop your world and just say, I'm going to take a few years off and get this all sorted out and come back.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, as much as these people impact our lives, the world keeps going.
Right.
And I think that's one of the biggest struggles with anyone going through it is just how you balance the grieving process with actually continuing on your life.
Yeah.
As, you know, they've led you and kind of, you know, built that foundation for you to really push forward.
Right. And I know with your dad, he would want you to like seize life and do what you're doing, you know, and he'd be so excited, or he is so excited in spirit, like, oh, yes, you know, this is great. And I know you know that in your heart, but yeah, you can't just pick up the phone and call him, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, I'd be dead at the other end. But yeah, he very much, and something that I really recognized in meeting a lot of the people that he touched around the community was just how full of life he was. And it wasn't, you know, obviously when it's a parent, you see them at home.
Right.
But you don't see them in the public's eye.
Right.
And so that it was really great to see that that wasn't just something that an act they put on for the kids.
Yeah.
For his wife. But I think what that really brought home was just the power of optimism. He was extremely optimistic fully energized and enthusiastic about everything.
Yep.
And that I think that helps you get through a lot of challenges. So that's what I've really tried to maintain throughout this process. Obviously, you have to grieve. It's healthy.
Right.
But, you know, there are a lot of things to be grateful for. I got to spend 27 years with him. And he left us in a great position and, you know, he had a significant impact. And so it's obviously there are a lot of silver linings to come from this.
His life was a gift. I mean, and that's kind of, I think, where people end up with things is just saying, you know, I was in a place to receive this gift for 27 years. So lucky me. I wish it could have been, you know, another 50 years that I could have received it. You know?
Yeah. But you can't be greedy, right? You know, and there are a lot of people that don't have fathers at all.
So this is true.
Yeah, you have to think about how fortunate you are in a lot of these situations.
Okay, so, and I want to get a little more detailed on this because I know there are people who have also recently experienced loss in the community. You can't schedule grief, I get that. Did you have, though, parameters around, not formal parameters, but just ideas like, okay, you know, I need to let myself go for this couple weeks and then I'm going to kind of collect myself? Like, how did you mentally think through that?
So there was no real structure behind behind it. I was pretty fortunate being in the final semester of business school that we were coming up on spring break anyways. So the timing of it was coincidental. So I was able to really stay at home, help out my mother and sisters, kind of unravel everything. But I think you just kind of have to let the grieving come as it comes. And you can't really push it away. And you know, I think once you accept it and you kind of deal with it, then the quicker you can kind of move on. Not that you're forgetting about the past, but just that you can kind of rid yourself of those emotions.
You know, I had another person whose father died at a young age, and he said there's a saying, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. And that's what he always felt about the grieving process. You just embraced it to be as close as you possibly could to it so that you could then move through it. Because otherwise, if you tried to keep it at a distance, it still had more power over you than somebody may want.
Yeah, and it's definitely been, for me, it's been, you know, it's really opened me up and made me more vulnerable. And something that I've had to deal with, you know, I think asking more people for help, really learning how to delegate this, you know, the process of really kind of unwinding someone's life when they're at kind of the pinnacle, the peak of it,
right,
is very tough. And so I think what we're really grateful for as a family is just how much the Chapel Hill and Carrboro community has really banded together to help us. I can't imagine, you know, going through this without the whole team and support that we have here.
Now, and I think that's very well said. And in addition, not only did you have a community that absolutely loved your dad, you also had a family. You know, you still have your mom and your sisters. And I think for those people who are on this journey alone, it can feel really, really alone.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's hard to kind of put myself in their shoes. I think that's one thing that I've really learned is when you know someone that's going through this process, you will never really know until you've been through it. And I think it was extremely humbling too. Now, you know, I'd had a classmate whose mother had passed away.
Right.
And you ask them how they're doing, but you realize once you're on the other side of it, I mean, it's tough. You know, you feel like people don't really understand where you are. And so it's a very humbling experience to know how hard it is for a lot of people, yet you see them get through it. And so I think that's what I've seen a lot is there's a lot of encouragement in seeing other people that have been in your exact same shoes. And they have the courage to come forward and tell you about their experience.
Did that help?
And that really helps you through.
Okay.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, because my next question is, what advice do you have for people who want to be helpful and who, you know, because there's ways that people can help and then there's ways that people feel, you know, that wouldn't be appropriate. What would be your thoughts?
I mean, offering help is the best thing you can do. You know, whatever your skill set is, whether that be kind of handy help around the house or, you know, baking meals. In the first couple of weeks, we were in no real place to be baking meals just because there's so much other involved with the process. So we constantly had food around the house, which was really helpful. So we had the energy to move on. I think Sheryl Sandberg, I don't know if you saw her post on Facebook, but she wrote it really eloquently, just kind of walking through the entire process and really related with everything she said. And I think she had some very tactical tips around just how you can approach someone and just say, how are you doing today versus how are you doing? And just really trying to be empathetic with their position is really helpful. And so that's, you know, I would suggest definitely reading her post just to kind of get a glimpse into the grieving process.
And I haven't read that one. I read the one she wrote when her husband first passed. And that was also eloquent. I mean, she's just a phenomenal writer.
Yeah.
Well, very good. So we are now going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to change hats and we're going to talk a lot about Brett. Now, I'll have you know, Brett graduated from Chapel Hill High back in 2006. Then he went to University of Southern California. And then he just finished up at Columbia Business School. So he is a Chapel Hill guy who is out shaping the world. And what makes Brett so unique is his ability to manifest his goals in such a way that a lot of people struggle to do, but he manages to do it. So he's going to be advising us and giving us some insights into how that process works. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. Please take a moment and check out our webpage, artofpotential.com. Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with the Art of Potential Show, and I am talking with Brett Derby. Brett is a Chapel Hill young man. He graduated from Chapel Hill High back in 2006, and he is now graduating from Columbia University with his MBA. So some of you may have heard our interview we did a few years ago when we were talking about how to be a good post-high school college student, and now we have Brett right after he finished his MBA. So, Brett, a couple questions. How does it feel?
It's great. I'm excited to hit the ground running. You know, it's nice to take a little two-year hiatus from work, but really excited to take what I've learned in the classroom and apply it in the real world.
Okay, so I have a question, and please don't get offended by it, but I do have this question, because you hear all kinds of things about MBAs. Was getting your MBA worth it? Do you think it was worth your time, money, and effort?
I have a great opportunity to return to Bain full time. So that alone, I think, is well worth it. But I think the real return on the investment will be 10, 15 years from now. Hopefully, you know, along with my goals, it'll help me to achieve those and exceed them.
So what is going to pay off in 10, 15 years that wouldn't have paid off before that without the MBA?
So there are a couple things in business school. I think you're meeting an incredibly diverse set of individuals. So I had 600 classmates who are going off in a number of different positions throughout the world.
Yep.
And so I'll have that connection forever with them. So you have a really strong network. Also, just what I've learned in class. So it's fairly similar material in itself to undergrad business curriculum, but you've been working for a number of years and you much better understand it. And you can really, it gives you a whole different perspective on things. So it's much more theoretical when you're in undergrad, but it's much more applicable in grad school.
Because you've had that couple of years to actually see a business function on some level.
Exactly. And it's really, you're not so much in the weeds, but you really see how the entire how the entire engine is working and the magic that it does.
So what are some favorite things you took away from your experience at Columbia?
Oh, some of the favorite things. So I really enjoyed the classes. I thought they were great. A lot of them are case-based, which
Ooh,
is
fun.
Really interesting. So you have great discussions, which just given how diverse the classroom is, both in their work experience as well as their backgrounds, it's really nice because your discussion can go anywhere and everywhere, which is really great. Also, being in the heart of New York City, just the speakers and all of the companies that come to campus are really exciting. So you're really seeing a lot of people doing a lot of very exciting things who just stop by for lunch or stop by for dinner.
Oh, wow.
Did you have
any favorites?
Oh, man, there's so many to list. I think one of the coolest was David Stern actually came in and spoke to us, former NBA commissioner. And he just had a lot of great real leadership aspects to speak about and ethics. And so, everyone has a different take on everything. And so it's really exciting to see all these different perspectives.
I know here at the Fuqua School at Duke and over at Keenan Flagler at UNC, they bring in a huge diversity of people from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Columbia did the same thing.
Yeah.
So you probably learned about, you know, business in Dubai.
Yeah, very much so. We were always trying to, if there was an individual from Asia, from a specific country where a company was based out of, we'd be asking them kind of what their experience was, what their advice was. So it's great to be able to get that while you're seated in classroom in New York City.
Yeah, that sounds terrific. And then what were some of the cultural differences that came up in business? Because I would think there would be a ton of them.
I think a lot of them are mannerisms, so just how you approach people in different cultures. So much of communication is virtual now.
Yes.
Just how you manage that, and there's still some cultures where it's very much face-to-face or over the phone versus email. So managing much more of the digital age, per se.
How interesting.
And I think those were definitely some of the biggest ones. And then I think a lot of it is just your exposure to all these different people in business school. You learn just kind of how to interact with different individuals.
Yeah.
And everyone, even if they're all from the same country, they're still their own unique personality.
Right.
And so how do you manage those? Right. How do you interact with that?
Yeah, that would be very fascinating. And I can see where that would also be an education in and of itself outside of the classroom. So let's talk about how you ended up at Columbia and a little bit about your journey. Because a little history here. I worked with Brett as his counselor when he was at Chapel Hill High School. And even then, you were a pretty focused individual. So how did you go from that experience to USC, where you graduated with honors, at the business school, and then on to Columbia? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So after USC, I just kind of fell into healthcare. There are these two companies in Southern California area doing some really exciting stuff, helping save lives, which for me, that was a great way to have an impact on the world. And so the first was DaVita, and then I had an opportunity to go over to Edwards Lifesciences and help them launch this really revolutionary medical device. So I had a great experience in both of those companies, but part of what I wanted to get exposed to was having unique projects that were fairly short-lived. So 3 to 6 months across a number of different industries. So like I said, I just kind of fell into healthcare.
Right.
And I thought there are a bunch of other exciting industries out there. Maybe healthcare is where I'll end up at the end of the day, but I wanted to explore a little. And so that's what led me back to business school, really that opportunity to make that transition in your career and approach consulting. So a lot of the bigger consulting firms pull right out of business schools.
They do.
And so it was a great kind of intersection there to really work with.
So you lined up an internship with Bain prior to getting hired over at Bain. Tell us about that, because that's brilliant.
Yeah, I think that for me going to business school, I think there are a lot of opinions out there, but going to one of the top schools is very helpful in the recruiting process. So
good to know. So it's worth the extra money.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think
because it ain't cheap.
it's questionable the investment at some of the lower ranking schools, depending on what your motives are for going.
Right.
If it's strictly for recruiting, then a lot of the bigger firms, you know, given their limited recruiting budgets, only go to a certain subset of schools. And so it's important to be in those target schools. So fortunately, Columbia Business School was one of those for Bain. And so got to meet a lot of their employees. And just through networking, was then able to land an interview. It's the case method, so very different from a behavioral interview that we're all most likely used to.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of preparation for that. But part of business school are all of the student organizations. And a lot of the professional student organizations, for example, the Management Consulting Association, help prepare you for these interviews.
Whew.
So given all of that, was very fortunate and successful, landed the internship with Bain, had a wonderful summer experience, and will be returning to them full time on the West Coast.
Okay, so now you're very good at this. You're very good at the networking thing. So Bain came on campus and you walked up and you said, hey, I'm Brett. I mean, how did you connect with them to get the initial internship going?
I think it was a very basic conversation, just asking them. I was at that time, so I just started business school, didn't know exactly what consulting was. And I've done this outside of consulting with just being very curious.
Yep.
And I think people can sense when you are genuinely curious about what they do, and people generally like to speak about what they do.
Right.
So I used that to my advantage and just really got a good sense of what exactly consulting was to make sure it's something I wanted to do. And at the same time, they shared a lot about their day in and day out, the different cases that they were working on, and it still seemed like a very attractive role to me. So they saw my interest, and I continued to pursue them. Of course, you have to submit your resume and cover letter and go through that process. But a lot of the first semester of business school, both parties are courting each other.
Oh, interesting.
So there are a lot of different networking events, different receptions and dinners, because they really want to understand you as an individual, since they'll be investing significant sums of money in you down the line in training.
Right. So they're really vetting you early on as you are just starting business school.
Very much so. It starts almost 2 weeks in.
Wow, so, that's a lot of pressure.
It moves quickly.
Yeah,
it moves very quickly. And the actual interviews take place the second and third week of winter vacation. So by the time you set foot back onto campus your spring semester, you could already have an internship lined up.
Wow. And so for the internship, now you said it was a case interview. Actually, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the different types of interview. Case interview is a new one on me. So you are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. I am talking with Brett Derby. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential Show, and I am talking with Brett Derby. Many of you know Chris Derby or knew Chris Derby. He was Brett's father before he left us in February. And Brett is now a recent graduate of Columbia Business School, and we are talking about kind of how to manifest your goals. Those of you who have known Brett in the community know he's always been very goal-driven. Obviously, the MBA is a very goal-driven activity. So, Brett, you talked about wanting to make a good impression for this company, Bain, and them having what's called a case study interview. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure.
Or a case interview? Yeah.
The case study is different in regards to basically the structure of the interview. So instead of picking apart someone's resume and asking them different behavioral questions, so what would you do in this situation or that situation? It's very much the interview starts out and they present to you a business problem. So it's very much like a consulting case in itself that happens over a 30-minute interview. So, you know, company X's profitability is declining. What would you recommend? And then really you go through the process. So a lot of what they're trying to elicit from you is your thought process. So it's important to get to the right answer, but they really want to see how you approach it. They want to make sure that you're structured, that you're logically thinking through the entire case. And so as you go, you'll let them know, okay, these are the three different things that I would want to look at to then determine what the root problem is. And then they might have some more information that they then share with you. And so you just continue to almost work through this puzzle until you find, you know, what the missing piece is.
So is there a right answer at the end of it?
Typically, yes, there is a right answer. Some of them can be more open-ended, but most of the times, yes, there is a right answer. There'll usually be a mix of brainstorming and qualitative answers as well as quantitative answers. So, yeah, some very exact answers at the end of it as
well. So if you don't get to the right answer, you're done. Like,
you know, there are actually cases – there are actually people that have made it through it without, you know, getting to the right answer. And it's very much – they just want to make sure that you're thinking about it correctly because they can kind of coach you how to find the actual answer, but it's much easier to coach someone who's already thinking about
who's already on the path, right?
Exactly.
And headed off in a different direction. So when you went through this process, did you have classmates who went off on totally different tangents and ended up in the wrong area?
And as far as the case interview itself?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're going through this interview process with, you know, 100, 200 other classmates.
Right.
And so, you know, most of the people tend to get to the right answer. It's a matter of time until they get there. But some of them, yeah, they end up in very interesting places. So it's always funny to sit down and kind of share your war stories, per se, after the interview.
I would think so. And then somebody probably has their hands in their – or their head in their hands at the end of it, like, oh, how did I miss that? Or, you know.
Yeah. Although coming out of the interview, the nice thing is you generally have a sense of how you performed.
Okay,
versus a behavioral interview where it could kind of go either way.
Right. And so just for those of you who don't know, a behavioral interview is one where they present and they're looking to see your past behaviors to predict your future behaviors. So they'll say, how did you handle this situation or how did you do that? And it's based on the situation, the task, the actions you took, and the results you got. And it's a great formula. It's used a lot in businesses, but they're really looking for very specific behaviors. Whereas here they're looking for specific results, it sounds like.
Yeah, and especially Bain, very results-oriented, results-oriented consulting firm. And so they do like to see that you get to the right answer and at the end of the day that you're able to help clients achieve their results.
So will they coach you on interpersonal things like how to work with the CEO? Because I would think some of the things that you're going to encounter have to do with leadership issues.
Very much so. There's a lot of interpersonal coaching. So oftentimes, most of the time, you're at the client site. So you're working in one of their conference rooms or within one of their cube spreads. And so constantly you're interacting with not just the CEO himself, but you know, their VPs, their managers. And so it's half of it is what you're actually delivering, so your recommended proposals. And half of it is how you're delivering it.
I would think so.
And so how you're finding those champions throughout the organization that are going to support your efforts, and then how they can kind of assimilate a support group around them.
Sounds in some ways like you're being taught how to play a very intricate chess game. You know, how are we going to win this one? Well, we got to move the pawn over here, bishop here. I don't know. It sounds very strategic in how it's done. So I do have to ask you, if you have a CEO that's, you know, kind of out of sync with the rest of the organization, how would they advise you to coach that person?
I'm looking forward to learning how. covered over the 10-week internship this summer. I think, you know, just like it's nice because they do have these frameworks that really kind of cover all the different angles that you would approach. And so I think that will be something that they would definitely tackle. And I think a lot of those situations, so we're either being hired by the board of a company or by the CEO or by some of his direct reports. I think you'll oftentimes find that there's someone that's, you know, not in line with the rest of the organization.
Right.
And how do you reel them back in?
Yeah. So that the organization doesn't go belly up. Well, I'll be curious to hear. You'll have to check in with us. So I have a question. So do you ever hear your dad's voice in your head? Like how has his influence or how do you feel his influence with you on a daily basis?
I haven't really – his voice every now and then, but you hear people say that they see people or that they hear them all the time, and maybe I'm just not at that point yet. But it is interesting. Like, I see him all around me. So in different instances, whether it's a song that's playing or, you know, whether there's just this coincidence and things seem to be going the right way, you know, like to think out maybe he's helping me out along the way. But I think it's more that I see him just in how he's prepared me for, you know, a life on my own, I guess, and left my family. So, you know, I think the biggest thing is just always being prepared. Obviously, like I said, you can't be prepared for when you lose a loved one, but he gave us really everything that we needed to move forward. And whether that kind of be just to emotionally stay strong or the optimism that he passed on, and that goes into goals as well. So, really thinking about what you want to achieve and then preparing your entire life for when that opportunity comes along that you've been waiting for.
So was your dad a big goal person?
Yeah, he had, you know, what a lot of people like to call those big, hairy, audacious goals. And so he had a few of those, and he was always kind of pushing himself. You know, I think that's part of what it is goals are out there more. You know, obviously you want to achieve them, but to really push yourself and make sure that you're reaching your full potential. And part of what his passing away really imparted on me was it's great at the end of the day to achieve your goal, but it's much more enjoying the process to get there.
And because, that's huge.
Yeah. And if you think about it, much more of our time is spent in the process than actually the result. And once, if you're like me, once you achieve that goal, it's on to the next one. So maybe you'll celebrate momentarily, but then you're pushing yourself towards the next goal. And so for me, just trying to enjoy much more of that process.
Well, and I know, and I'm just going to talk about your dad for a moment. I know from seeing him at different chamber events and Chapel Hill Leeds events, he was always very present in the moment. Like it was always, it seemed to be a state of joy for him to be around everyone or to be talking. He didn't seem to have this kind of like, okay, I need to shake your hand so then I can go and shake somebody else's hand so then I can, you know. He was very genuine and present, which was one of the many good, great qualities about him.
Yeah, he really didn't have much of an agenda. And things just, you know, I think he was just a strong believer and things will work out. And so he really did live life to the fullest and in the moment. And things did work out for him. And he had a wonderful life. And so, yeah, it's a good lesson for all of us. Yeah. Maybe to be, you know, less agenda driven and, you know, be prepared and have those goals. But you also just have to enjoy life.
Well, so what were some of the goals? Did he share his goals with you? Did he write them down? Like, I want to talk about his goal process, and then I want to talk about yours.
Yeah, so, you know, he would write them down, and it was much more high-level goals. So he was at the point where, you know, family was financially independent and, and successful in that regard and really wanted to begin giving back to the community. So that's how he was really getting involved in extraordinary ventures and he felt that it was really important after having reached his personal goals to really help others reach those goals. And so that was really big for him. He was getting ready to actually retire and move down to the beach. And so that was, you know, one of his goals was to always move to the beach. He spent, but thankfully he spent plenty of time there anyways. So, you know, I think he achieved that anyways. But yeah, he would very much, you know, reflect whether it was on a quarterly basis or annually. Look at kind of how he was tracking to his goals, if things were going well, what he needed to adjust. But I think he was able to balance very well both the planning part of it and the actual execution of it.
That's huge. Now, did he bring you in to see him do that? Like, how do you know that's what he was doing?
Yeah, so we were really close. So we talked quite a bit, and he would encourage me to set goals and kind of how I was thinking about achieving them. And then over winter break, actually, when I was home, we actually sat down for a whole day just kind of went through this and just throwing our thoughts around, you know, what we were interested in, what we were excited about. And so he gave me a lot of great visibility. And I think that's where a lot of comfort comes with his passing away is that he was very transparent. And I don't think it was just to me, but to pretty much everyone about his feelings and even all of his staff. You know, they knew exactly where they stood with him, what they needed to do and kind of where they're tracking.
Well, we are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about manifesting goals. You are listening to Kristen Heemstra with the Art of Potential Show. Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemster with the Art of Potential Show, and I have with me Brett Derby. Many of you knew Brett's father, Chris Derby, who is just an amazing man in our community. And what we've been talking about are goal setting and how Chris had goals and how Brett has goals and how you too should have goals. So, Brett, advice for people who haven't had goals before, where would you start with them? We're going to give you a chance to be an NBA coach to the entire town of Chapel Hill. So here you go. No pressure. Don't worry about it. Right.
I think at the end of the day, really a goal is more just a compass. And it's something to strive for, right? So it's the light at the end of the tunnel. When maybe the easiest way to do is, you know, when you think about your eulogy, what do you want people to be saying about you? What do you want to, when you're on your deathbed, have achieved? And what are your regrets going to be? What are you going to wish you had done? And those are your goals, right? So,
and those are big goals. I mean, they're literally like they're your life goals.
Yeah. And
it's not to run 5 miles. It's like, you know.
Yeah, I think. And there's definitely.
A character goal.
Yeah, like you. So that's a great point. I mean, they're your life goals. And then, you know, they're your shorter term goals. So what mm-hmm. do you want to achieve over the next year? And, you know, it could be as simple as a to-do list. But it's more just things that. You don't want to let time slip away, which I think can be very easy. And,
yes.
and then you look back and you wonder maybe what you did the past year.
Right.
And so,
or the past five. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think it's really kind of getting together those big goals and whether they're just overarching thoughts. You know, I want to be known as a good person. I want to be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've got that written down and a good idea there, well, what are the steps to achieve that? You know, is it working with others? Is it volunteering your time so that they trust your work and kind of going through that process. And for each person, it's going to be, you know, very different. And their steps
yes,
could be
will.
Very detailed. Some could mm-hmm. be more general. And I think you'll continue to iterate as you go on and as you have experience with your goals. But for me, that's what's worked out well. And I think in general, that's how I've heard other people have success as well.
And I would think there'd be some parallels between you and in a business, and I mean this for everybody listening to the show, you are your own business, period. That's kind of the end of the story. And the way that you choose to manifest your energy is, in a sense, what your business is done, what it's acquired, or how it's been led. So if we look at it from that perspective, let's say we have some people who their business is not as successful as they would like it to be. And I'm going to leave this pretty general because in the business – to the listeners, it can be anything. You want to accomplish something that you haven't figured out yet how to accomplish. So if you were to hire someone like Brett, so Brett, you're coming in as a consultant, where would you start people?
I think first is really defining for them what success is. So
naming.
Yeah, I mean, they could be unhappy with it, but why are they unhappy with their business? And so once you have that definition, you have something that you're on the same page. And you understand what your ultimate goal is, whether that be, you know, profitability or whether that be someone losing 15 pounds in a year.
Right.
Then you kind of back up and you say, okay, well, what are you doing currently? How do you invest your time? How are you investing your money? Since those are your biggest resources to achieve those goals. So, maybe you're going, let's say, so lose 15
You got
to
be
pounds.
Honest, right?
Yeah. So let's say it's
I think a lot weight. About losing weight as I eat my Twix bar. Right?
Yeah. And so, right. Your actions aligned with what you're trying to achieve.
Right.
I think that's what's really helpful about goal setting is it gives you a longer term focus. I think there are a lot of studies that show how impulsive people are and how short-sighted we are.
And Walmart and Target and Costco love that about us.
Yeah. And so if you have that goal at the end of the day, it gives you something to kind of save for or align your actions with versus just living in the moment and then kind of letting time just wither away.
So in terms of goals, the big goals are the character goals. It's who I want to be. It's who I want people to remember me. Or how I want people to remember me in my eulogy. And then the shorter term goals are things that I like the way you said you have to write them down. I think when you have to put words around something, it forces you to get clear on it. Because some of us have goals that are floating around in our head but really don't have a form. You know, they're ideas that they would be nice if they happened one day. But actually putting it down, I would also think would lend some level of accountability, because then you've kind of owned it.
Absolutely. And if you're really courageous, you can take a step further and share them with your close friends, your family. You know, if these goals are aggressive, as hopefully they will be, then you're going to need support. You know, you can't achieve much by yourself. And so by making yourself more accountable to your peers and also getting their help, I think you'll just have a greater chance at succeeding.
Yes, or you could hire a consultant. You know, but seriously, you look at Brett, he's a consultant for a company that will be working with businesses to help them achieve things. For some people, you need a personal coach, or there's some level of investment. When you start writing a check, there's a whole different level of investment that occurs.
Absolutely. Yeah. And whether that be signing up for a class that you're interested in.
Yep.
So, you know, whether it's just more of a hobby class or if you're pursuing a second degree. Once you write that check, even if it's to the gym, then you're much more committed.
Yes.
And if you're able to kind of calculate how much it costs every day to join that gym, even more so.
So when you went to Columbia, what was the age spread of people in that program?
So I was kind of at the bottom of it. So it was about 25 was the low. It was the youngest.
Yep.
And then we had, you know, most of the people were kind of around their early 30s. There were a few that were in their late 30s, early 40s.
Yep.
But yeah, for the bulk of it, probably the average age was 28, 29.
Okay. I wonder, because I know for a lot of people, kind of folks in their early 20s will go through a career phase, and then during that phase, they'll figure out what they liked and what they didn't like, and then set a new goal or a new path, if you will.
Yeah, so. And I think that's absolutely important. And I've heard a lot of people say that in crafting your ideal job, it's much more what you've disliked and almost kind of checking those things off, and then eventually you'll create your ideal job. But for me, one of the really nice things about business school and all the different jobs that I've had is just getting exposed to a lot of different things. So whether that be a job function or industry, for me, I think it continues to challenge me. So you don't just get stuck in this rut and you aren't just doing it because that's the way things have been done. And so for me, that's been an exciting challenge.
Yeah, and consulting has that element. I mean, you'll never – well, rarely will you have the exact same thing twice.
Yeah, especially at Bain, they really encourage people to do things very different in the hopes that you can take one practice from one industry and apply it to another and really come up with some really disruptive ideas.
It's like CrossFit.
Yeah, think of it for corporate CrossFit.
You know, right, corporate CrossFit. Okay, and the other thing which I think people enjoy, particularly you, is there's a finite window that you're working with a company, and then it changes. And that's one thing I know I've enjoyed about the school cycle. There's a beginning and an end.
Yeah, it's very nice. And, you know, oftentimes cases will roll, which means they'll sign us on for another 3 to 6 months. But it is really nice in that you have that deadline. So you want to come up with an answer in that given deadline so then you can really start to execute upon it. I think a big part of consulting is coming up with that plan. And then you're really teaching the client how to execute it and helping them through that.
All right. So let's bring this back to us, because it is all about us listeners. So a deadline, if you set a goal, when you set goals, did you have deadlines attached to them?
Yes. So oftentimes, you know, so these character goals, hard to set a deadline to those.
Right.
But
agreed.
I would set a deadline for what I plan to do in the next year. That's going to kind of put me closer to that goal. And then for my shorter-term goals that I wanted to happen within a year, I'd have usually kind of quarterly deadlines. So, and I'd map out my year. This is, you know, I want to do this in the first 3 months of the year, this in the second 3 months, et cetera. And so really having those deadlines helps you to continue to hold yourself accountable.
And then when you get really tired and you don't feel like doing and working with your deadlines anymore, how do you stay motivated?
You know, it's
not tough. That anyone would ever do that, but just in case.
Well, you definitely have to rest. But I think looking back on what you've already achieved can be very motivating.
Yeah.
And also looking forward to those goals that you're hoping to achieve. And so you've already put in X amount of investment and time and money. And so you don't want to waste that. And you're that much closer to achieving your goal. And so hopefully those will kind of further encourage you to reach it.
Encourage you to keep going, keep on keeping on. Any last parting words of advice?
No, I think, you know, just seek as much advice from everyone. You know, I think that's one thing that I've learned and being just really meeting a bunch of different people is everyone will have, maybe if it's just one line, but over a lifetime accumulating a lot of single lines will build up to a great a great book.
And listen to yourself. I mean, you're the one who's setting the goals, and I, you know, those of us who knew Chris Derby knew he was a man of great integrity and just a lovely person, and Brett's obviously the same way. But they're two people who are present and listen to themselves, and I think that's also very, very important because the world can get overwhelming with its messages. You have just listened to the Art of Potential show with Kristen Heemstra. Please take a moment and check out our website, artofpotential.com.